Oh, hello everybody, and welcome to the International Soccer Podcast by Canada Soccer Files. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor, and today we will be discussing Group F, the final group in Euro 2020.
That's right, we'll be doing a group-by-group preview, or we are doing a group-by-group preview of Euro 2020, and within that, a team-by-team overview. And we're also going to do an overview of players, but we are still considering a deeper dive into examining the players.
So part one, we're going to begin with an overview of the group. This will take a look at the rankings, the odds, the head-to-head records, and a comparison of the size of each country.
Okay, and then part two, we launch into the main part of the podcast, which is a team-by-team overview. We're going to look at their long history, their recent history, their qualifying record for this cup, and a brief overview of their players.
And finally, in part three, we'll have a discussion of each team's prospects, and we'll discuss our predictions for this group.
All right. I see you're wearing a red shirt there. Is it what I hope it is?
Yes, this is my South Korea jersey. I've finally decided to wear a non-European team and be neutral. So Korea was the best I had for that.
Okay, well, I was looking for my Honduras shirt, but I think I packed it away somewhere, and so I can't be so neutral. But I have already admitted to a bit of a bias for Wales, and today I'm wearing a Cardiff jumper.
Very nice.
Okay, let's begin with part one, an overview of the teams. Let's just do a quick introduction of Group F. Connor?
Sure. So Group F contains Germany, France, Portugal, and Hungary. Germany are three times winners of the Euros and have reached the semifinals in each of the last three editions of this tournament.
Okay, Portugal are the defending champions. They won the Euro 2016, which was their first ever major trophy.
The team Portugal beat in that 2016 final was host nations France. France, of course, come in as the defending World Cup champions.
All right, and Hungary are a former powerhouse soccer nation, at one time stronger than all of these teams. We'll have more to say about that later. Hungary are appearing for their second straight Euro Cup, having reached the expanded tournament in 2016. So that seems like a very strong group, Connor. Aren't the teams supposed to be seeded so that they avoid each other in the group stages?
Well, we've talked about it a bit on some earlier podcasts, but it's worth mentioning again here. For major tournaments, teams are sorted into different pots. Each team in the same pot is then drawn into a different group, so teams from the same pot cannot be drawn against each other. The pots are usually based on FIFA world rankings, so if there are six groups, in theory, the six best teams are in pot one, the next six best teams are in pot two, and so on. However, for this tournament, teams were ranked according to the number of points they achieved in their qualifying group. So that's changed the traditional order of things. Ukraine ended up in pot one, for example, along with Germany. France had the seventh best qualification record, and so ended up in pot two. And Portugal had the 13th best qualification record, and ended up in pot three. So that's how it came to be that three strong teams all ended up together in the same group.
Okay, well, poor Hungary. What do you think of that system, Connor?
In a way, I don't mind it, in that they've based their the rankings on the qualification record, which seems like a very merit-based way of seeding teams. However, it does throw up some weird results, or it can, and that seems to be the case here with three very strong teams all in the same group together. What do you think of it?
Yeah, kind of like you. I like it in theory because it kind of forces teams to put their best foot forward in qualifying. But, you know, in practice, it ends up being a group like this. I mean, I've heard of the group of death. They usually nominate one group in every tournament as a group of death, but I've never. We need a stronger word than death for this group.
That's right. Poor Hungary.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the rankings. I'll just move the page down here a little bit.
All right. So Germany are 13th in the FIFA rankings and 9th according to ELO. They were number one in the FIFA rankings and number two in ELO going into the 2018 World Cup. However, after disastrous results in the Cup and elsewhere, they first dropped to 16th and 9th before the end of that year. That ended a run of 12 years spent inside the top 10 in both ranking systems. And again, they enter this tournament as 13th and 9th, respectively.
Okay, well, you know, even when Germany is below 10th spot, you'd always kind of view them as a team capable of going to the final. How about France?
France is ranked 2nd according to FIFA and 3rd according to ELO. They are one place behind Belgium in both systems, and so are the highest, second highest ranked team in the tournament. France have been very up and down in the rankings, though. They were number one overall in both systems following their major successes at the turn of the century. Between April 2010 and December 2013, however, they were 10th or lower, reaching a low of 21st in the FIFA rankings and 25th in ELO in July 2010.
July 2010, that's shortly after they mutinied in the 2010 World Cup, isn't it?
That's right. There was a player revolt against coach Raymond Domenech, which certainly had an impact for on-field results as well, as they crashed out disgracefully from the tournament in South Africa.
Well, one of them's going to have to go here. Maybe it'll be Portugal. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, Portugal are currently 5th in both systems. They are much more consistent than France in the rankings, however. They've been in the top 10 in the FIFA rankings for almost 12 straight years. And the lowest they reached during that time in ELO was 13th, which was just prior to their Euro Cup win in 2016.
Well, going way back in history, I see they were 36th in December 1998. We'd maybe have to go back a bit further to see really how average they were in the previous century, which we'll get into today. Speaking of deep in the past, how about Hungary's ranking?
So Hungary are 40th in FIFA and 35th in ELO. This represents a rise from 52nd and 55th at the end of 2019. Their best recent ranking was 20th in FIFA in June 2016, but during that time they only reached 42nd in ELO. So given their sharp rise of 20 places in FIFA in just 6 months, the ELO ranking seems to be a better reflection of their general play overall. And again, they were around 40th in ELO at that time.
Yeah, this one goes, the FIFA rankings only go back to 1995. Actually, the ELOs go back further, but I didn't check. But do you have any guess where they would have been around 1954?
1954, they must have been in the top five in the world, if not closer to first or second.
Yeah, they won. They went undefeated for 6 years in a row by that time. So they were considered the best, although England disagreed. I have a little story about that today. Let's take a look at the odds. They're pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, Germany and France are given basically the same odds to win the group, and Portugal are only marginally back. So it seems like the bookkeepers are expecting a wide-open three-horse race. Unsurprisingly, Hungary are quite a ways back of those three teams, and are only given outside odds of winning the group. And these odds, of course, are just for winning the group, not necessarily to advance, which either two or three teams will from this group.
Okay, well, when we get to the end, we'll see whether we agree with those odds or whether we have our differing opinions.
Do you want to take us through the head-to-head records?
Yeah, Definitely. Germany has a winning record over France. And sorry, I'm just a bit lost in my speech here. A winning record over France and over Portugal. But strangely, they don't have a winning record over Hungary. When it comes to France, they actually lost their last game with France in the 2016 Euro Cup. But otherwise, they beat them in the 2014 World Cup quarterfinal. So, sorry, the 2016 Euro Cup was the semifinal. So recently, they're fairly even. And surprisingly, they haven't played each other in major competition that much, just five games, and Germany has a slight edge. Germany versus Portugal. Well, Portugal was kind of weak in the last century, so they basically had the better of them, except for one game in 1986 that Portugal won. But interestingly, since 2006, they've played four times, and Portugal has won them all. That's the third place match in 2006, the quarterfinal in 2008, and the group stage in 2012 and 2014. Portugal have won them all. What do you think, Connor?
Yeah, kind of surprising that they've had the better record there. I'm just looking at your notes. Was it Portugal or was it Germany? I may be getting confused here.
Oh, I am getting confused. I was saying Portugal won all of those. Yikes, I gotta start that part again. It's actually Germany that has won in the competitions. This is in the finals of competitions rather than in qualifying. And yes, they've won the last four, having last met in 2014. Okay, well, I botched that up, but hopefully I'll get this one right. Germany and Hungary have only met two times, and it was both in 1954. I'm going to save that story until later, but basically each one of them won a game there. France and Portugal haven't met often either, just four times. The last time they met was in the 2016 Euro Cup final. And of course, Portugal won that game in extra time. A bit of a good story for that one too. Portugal versus Hungary. They have met eight times and Portugal has won seven of those times. They didn't really meet in the past except for the World Cup in 1966. And they tied 3-3 in the last Euro Cup. So that's kind of interesting coming into this. Hungary won the group, whereas Portugal finished third. But in 2018 World Cup qualifying, Portugal won both legs. Finally, Hungary have a winning record over France. They beat them twice in 1964. And bested them in 1972, but then in 1978 and 1986, both in World Cup group stages, Hungary lost. They were a bit weaker by that point. Okay, that's the head-to-head record. A few surprises there. Let's take a look at the countries in terms of size and population.
Sure. So Germany are the most populous country located entirely in Europe with 84 million people. I say it that way because Germany is behind population, behind Russia and Turkey, who have also both qualified for this tournament, but both these countries have parts of their population located in Asia. France is a larger country than Germany in terms of area, but has a smaller population with 64 million people, so that's some 20 million fewer. In terms of population, France is the next largest country in Europe behind Germany. Moving on to Portugal. Portugal has 10.6 million people, so they're quite a ways behind the top two in this group, but they are considered a medium-sized country in Europe, on par with others, countries like Sweden and the Czech Republic. And then also on that list of medium-sized countries is Hungary, who with 10 million people are just behind Portugal by only about 500,000. So all four of these countries are in the top 20 most populous UEFA members. So in summary, Germany have 84 million, France 64, Portugal 10.6, and Hungary 10 million people. So there'll be lots of European fans tuning in to Group F.
You bet. Okay, now we move to the main part of the podcast. I keep calling it a podcast, but it's also a video cast. But I should say that there's nothing really on the video that we don't cover in speaking. So we're aiming to have it be both a podcast and a video podcast. We've added nicknames to this team-by-team section. So what about Germany?
Yeah, the nickname kind of used in Germany is the National Elf or the National 11. The term I'm more familiar with is a term more commonly used outside of Germany, and that's die Mannschaft, which basically means the team. I didn't realize that wasn't really used in Germany, though.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, well, let's begin the long history with just a view of their participation in both Cups. So Germany is the second best team in the world behind Brazil. They have won four World Cups and they've reached the final eight times. Their regional record is not as impressive, but they have won the European Cup three times and been in the final six times. I think they withdrew from the 1930 World Cup. I think they were unwilling to make that long boat trip to Uruguay. And they didn't enter the first two Euro Cups either. But other than that, they participated in every cup. Moving on to their long history. Oh, okay, we've got a little bit of a format change here, Connor. Do you want to just talk about that?
Yeah, given all four of these teams really have such long long histories on the international stage, we could really talk for hours about their histories. But what we're going to do is just do a kind of a brief kind of high-level version of their World Cup history, and we'll spend a bit more time talking about their Euro history versus trying to fit it all in.
That's right. And if we continue doing this podcast, we'll probably go that way, whereas if it's the World Cup, we'll cover that in more detail, or if it's the regional competition, we'll cover that in more detail. So just a quick overview of the World Cup then. It was a weak start in World Cup play, withdrawing in 1930 and being banned in 1950, which I should have mentioned during their participation. They were basically blamed for their role in the war there, so left out of a lot of world sporting competitions. However, this weak start was offset with a third place finish in 1934. From then until 2018, though, they not only qualified for all cups, but they went past the group stage every time, the latter a record that not even Brazil can boast. Surprisingly, the only time they hadn't passed the group stage was in 1938, which was at the height of their political power, the Nazis, of course, in power. Had they won in 1994 rather than in 1990, their wins would be, like German clockwork, every 20 years. As it is, the mid-90s proved a relatively weak period, reaching only the quarterfinal twice in a row in 1994 and 1998. Outside of those years, they placed in the top three every time from 1982 to 2014. Perhaps bigger than winning the Cup in 2014, they thrashed Brazil, who was hosting the Cup, by a score of 7-1, which, together with Brazil's failure to win since 2002, argued for Germany being the best World Cup team. That record, the whole thing, puts into perspective the magnitude of and the humiliation at being knocked out of the group stage of the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah, I'll talk about the 2018 World Cup right away, but that 7-1 win against Brazil is worth a second mention. I watched highlights not long ago, and Germany scored 4 goals in a 6-minute period in the first half. It was just incredible to rewatch that event.
I actually arrived late at my brother's place to watch that one. You were there, and I couldn't believe what I saw when I walked in. It was already 3-0 or 4-0.
That's just an astonishing game.
Mm-hmm.
Less astonishing, though, was Germany's record in the 2018 World Cup. They went into that tournament as reigning champions and actually breezed through qualification, winning all 10 of their games. However, Germany put up a feeble defense of their title crown. They lost to Mexico in their opening game and then were very fortunate to beat Sweden on a last-minute free kick, despite being outplayed for large periods of that game. They entered a crucial final match against relative minnows South Korea. Despite relentless pressure, Germany could not find a way through, and while pushing hard for a winner, conceded twice in second-half stoppage time to lose 2-0. Kevin, you're a Korea fan. What was it like for you watching that game?
Well, I lived in Korea for 15 years, and I was there for the 2002 World Cup, and you know, that was amazing. This was almost as amazing. Son Heung-min running at the bare German defense. It was just, I was in heaven. I don't mind Germany, but to see an underdog like that knock Germany out, it was special in an evil, cackly way. Let's take a look at the Euro Cup history. This will be a bit longer and include some of the stories behind the tournament. They started weakly in European competition too, and their record is not as stellar as their World Cup. They didn't enter the first two Euro Cups and didn't qualify on their first entry in 1968. But that's the only time they failed to qualify for a cup. They had an excellent spell after that, reaching the final 3 times and winning it twice. In fact, they were undefeated through the whole period except for that loss in the final in 1976 to Czechoslovakia. And even that was on penalties, so they were undefeated in regular time, we could say. They won the final over USSR in 1972 and over Belgium in 1980. 1984 was a group stage finish, and 1988 was almost as poor, reaching only the semi-final as host. Just to remind you that the tournament was 8 teams at this time, so once you got past the group stage, you were at the semi-finals. There, despite going undefeated in the group stage and winning it over Italy, they lost to the Netherlands. A second strong period was when they reached the final twice more in a row. They lost to Denmark in 1992, and after beating out England in penalties in the semi-finals, they beat the Czech Republic to claim their second title. That was in 1996. It was 2 group stage finishes after that, earning only 1 draw in the group stage of Euro 2000, and arguably worse in 2004 because they tied Latvia, though they also tied the Netherlands. So 2 ties, but one of them was to Latvia. But they came back into form in 2008 with a second place finish, though it was a fairly easy run to the final where they lost to Spain. Italy prevented them from reaching the final in 2012, knocking them out in the semi-finals after Germany had won all games in qualifying and in the group stage. And it was host France at the same stage, the semi-final stage in 2016. Looking at their qualifying record in Euro, it was Yugoslavia who finished ahead of them in 1986. Again, their only non-qualification. But it was actually a tie in Albania in the last game that really put them to the sword. On the whole.
I'll just clarify.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I'll just clarify that was 1968.
Oh, what did I say? 86?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. No, 1968, their only non-qualification. On the whole, qualifications have been less impressive than in the World Cup. They were undefeated in qualifying over the next three campaigns, though, knocking out England in the first of these. But they tied Greece twice in the second and Malta once in the third, which was in 1980. Northern Ireland in 1984 handed them their first qualifying loss since 1968, and they did it again in the second leg, so they beat Germany home and away. Despite those two losses and also tying Austria, Germany nevertheless qualified over both. This pattern of finishing first but losing once or twice to a weak team persisted. They lost to Wales in 1992, Bulgaria in 1996, where they also tied Wales at home, and Turkey in the first game of the 2000 campaign. And worst of all, 3-0 loss to the Czech Republic at home in 2008, where they also tied Cyprus, Ireland, and in their last game at home, Wales again, to actually finish behind the Czech Republic. Although both Czech Republic and them qualified directly. They had been undefeated in going back to 2004. They had been undefeated in qualifying for that tournament, which was the first time they were undefeated in a qualification since 1980. But they did tie Lithuania at home and Iceland away. They won all games in 2012, which was their only perfect campaign in Euro Cup qualification, compared to 5 perfect campaigns in World Cup qualification. 2016 marks the only time they lost 2 games in a campaign, going down to Poland and Ireland. That inconsistency, though, shouldn't overshadow the fact that they only failed to qualify once in 1968.
Yeah, that's an amazing qualification record.
Mm-hmm.
In recent tournaments, Germany were knocked out in the semifinals by Italy in 2012. Mario Balotelli, you remember him?
I do.
He scored both goals in a 2-1 win, and then they lost out to France in the semifinals in 2016. Prior to losing to France, though, Germany avenged their loss to Italy from 4 years earlier by beating them in an epic penalty shootout in the quarterfinals. Both teams missed 3 of their first 5 penalties, but Germany won after 9 shooters each.
Wow.
As you mentioned, Germany had a bit more trouble than usual qualifying in 2016. They won their group ahead of Poland by just a point, but lost to Poland and Ireland on the road, and then only managed a draw against Ireland as well.
Yeah, it looks like Ireland and Britain, the smaller teams in Britain, caused them a bit of trouble. Let's just take a quick look in summary then. In terms of consistency, Germany is a very consistent team, but when they do lapse, they tend to do so spectacularly, but we can always rely on them to recover quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Germany are one of the most consistent tournament performers of all time. What happened in 2018, you think would have to be an aberration. And from their point of view, hopefully they can recover as they've done in the past. However, there is a sense that they may not be quite back to their dominant best yet. And recent results support that, which we'll get into, which may suggest that another rebuild is in order. Overall, I would say there's kind of an unusual number of question marks over Germany heading into a major tournament.
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often. We're going to focus a little bit on their recent history here. The 2014 World Cup was their first major tournament win since 1996. So that ended a dry spell. But they had been a powerhouse even when they were rebuilding. And I remember in 2004, 2006, they were expecting weaker results because they were rebuilding, but they still finished near the top. They looked uncharacteristically shaky in 2016, despite reaching the semi-final and losing to host France there. But in terms of team building, they should be doing better, because in the 2017 Confederation Cup, they sent a B team. I remember Timo Werner was on it, and some of the guys who are coming up now, which was a testament to their depth in talent. And even in the short term then, the 2018 World Cup forces a bit of a re-evaluation, and it does kind of seem to need some rebuilding. So to be sure, they'll probably return to the top, but continued poor performances through 2018 and 19 suggest they'll be struggling in the short term, as you said.
Yeah, an interesting thing for Germany is Coach Joachim Löw has been in charge since 2006. So he's taking Germany to a seventh major tournament, but he will be stepping down after this European Cup. So the job of rebuilding will fall to former Bayern Munich manager Hansi Flick.
Okay. Well, we'll take a look at the 2020 Euro Cup qualifying. We've said that they're actually a little bit shakier in Euro qualifying than in World Cup qualifying, and it kind of bears out here exactly the pattern we've noticed in over the last 20 years, which is losing one game, this time not to really a weak team. Often it's a weak team, but this time it was the Netherlands. Otherwise, they won all games and finished on top of the group anyway, which is what they usually do. Let's take a look at their recent matches.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about some poor form, and that's especially come in the Nations League. In the 2018-19 Nations League A, they finished third out of three behind Netherlands and France, though because of a reorganization, we're not relegated. In the 2020/2021 League A, the Nations League, they came behind Spain and ahead of Switzerland and Ukraine. However, they won just two of their six games and were crushed 6-0 in Spain.
Wow.
In World Cup 2022 play, they won at home to Iceland and away to Romania, but then were shocked at home by North Macedonia, who won 2-1 in Germany. What do you make of that?
That is, a terrible thing to be coming into this group with. The 2018 World Cup shock at the group stage and this. And then they face teams like France and Portugal. I would be nervous.
Yeah, the 6-0 loss to Spain, that came in just November 2020. So really not that long ago. So like we said, a few question marks over a normally reliable and consistent German team.
Yeah, let's take a look at their scorers during the Euro Cup. And we see, I'm going to let you pronounce his name because I'm worried I'll butcher it on top.
Yeah, Serge Gnabry. He was their leading goal scorer in 2020 Euro Cup qualifying. He plays for Bayern Munich. He spent some time in England, but failed to make the cut at West Brom. So he ended up in Bayern Munich, where he's been a great performer for them. And he's actually scored 15 times in just 20 appearances for Germany.
That's so amazing. He was with Arsenal, wasn't he, for a while?
He was with Arsenal. And his time at West Brom that I mentioned was a failed loan spell.
Wow.
He seems to have got over that.
Yeah, they should have held on to him a little longer. I see Leroy Sané and Ilkay Gundogan there. Is Sané out on loan, or is he just not playing?
He is now at Bayern Munich, having moved from Manchester City, kind of forced a way out. But yeah, teammate Ilkay Gundogan is coming off his best scoring season for Manchester City.
Yeah, sorry, I got to brush up on my players there, but he was not popular with the coach, I think, at Man City. Let's go down to the 2022 World Cup. So more recent scorers. Looks like Ilkay Gundogan has moved from a defensive midfielder to an attacking midfielder. Is that right?
Yeah, he's been given a lot more freedom, certainly at his club team by Pep Guardiola. And it seems perhaps Germany is recognizing that as well. He scored two of their goals in qualification for the 2022 World Cup, and is their leading goal scorer at this early stage.
Yeah, so maybe they are rebuilding a bit because Kai Havertz and Serge Gnabry are pretty young.
Mm-hmm. One interesting thing about the German team is that Thomas Müller and Mats Hummels are back in the team after being told in March 2019 by Joachim Löw that they were no longer in his plans, but they have been recalled for this tournament.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see that. The fact that they had been out for so long and then the fact that they're coming back after that length of time, you kind of wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, it really does. You wonder what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Okay, are we ready to move on to France?
Yes, let's talk about Les Bleus, as they are known, the Blues, France.
Okay. All right, well, we'll give an overview of their tournament participation in both Cups. They're a senior team, having entered all World Cups except in 1950 when they withdrew, and they've been in every Euro Cup. They've come in and out of prominence, but they're marked by three, maybe four strong periods. The first was around 1958, led by Just Fontaine. The second was in the 1980s, led by Michel Platini. And the third, at the turn of the millennium, which included kind of an afterflash in 2006, was led by Zinedine Zidane. Recently, we could call this period a fourth period of strength, although it's not necessarily associated with one strong personality. Agreed?
Yes, I agree. Perhaps a big personality, if there is one, would be head coach Didier Deschamps, who was a great player, of course, for France as well.
All right. Yeah, well said. Okay, let's do a short version of their World Cup history then. France were there from the beginning of the World Cup, but were not very strong. They were knocked out of the first round of the first two World Cups and only reached the quarterfinals, even though they hosted in 1938. Their first strong period, around 1958, was actually the weakest of their strong periods, and they took third place in the 1958 World Cup. The second strong period saw them take fourth place in 1982 and third in 1986 in those World Cups. While their third period around the turn of the century saw them winning the cup as the host in 1998. And finishing with the swan song second place in 2006, which followed a ghastly performance in 2002. They had a second World Cup win in 2008, which is the jewel of a fourth strong period. I guess we would have to consider it that, given their recent performances. Outside of these four periods, though, they only passed the group stage twice. 1938 as host and in 2014, while they failed to qualify five times. That was in 1962, twice in a row in 1970 and 74, and again twice in a row in 1990 and 94. That's close to the number of times they've fallen off at the group stage. So five non-qualifications, six group stage exits, and seven times now they've passed the group stage. So fairly even across the board there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll just recap France's World Cup final victory in 2018. They actually started by negotiating a quite difficult qualifying group, which included Netherlands and Sweden. They won the group 4 points ahead of both teams. Sweden went through the playoffs and Netherlands were eliminated. At the World Cup, France began with wins over Australia and Peru in the group stage and then a draw with Denmark. They then had quite a difficult route to the final through the knockout stage. It began with a memorable 4-3 win over Argentina. They were down 2-1 just after halftime, but then scored three goals in 11 minutes to take control, and then held on after a slight scare with Argentina pulling a goal back in stoppage time. France then beat Uruguay 2-0 in the quarterfinals, then Belgium 1-0 in the semifinals, and then Croatia 4-2 in the finals. So they didn't rely on any penalties or extra time. They were able to win all their knockout games outright and really were the dominant team in that World Cup.
Yeah, I think the most memorable thing, though, was, I mean, you're saying they didn't rely on penalty shootouts, I'm sure, but they did kind of rely on a penalty in the final, or actually a VAR decision for a penalty that was pretty controversial.
Yeah, and that was a goal that put them 2-1 up in the game. And then after that penalty, they never really looked back after that. But I do remember, I don't remember the particular incident, but I do remember it being somewhat controversial.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a look at the Euro Cup history, which will be a bit longer and more detailed. Their four periods of strength are mirrored in the Euro Cup 2, actually. They finished fourth in the first cup in 1962. Which they hosted. And actually, that's a fairly poor result, given that they were hosts. It basically means that they lost both games that they played. It took until 1984 and hosting again to reach the next cup. That was in the Platini years, and they won their first title in 1984, winning as hosts. The semi-final there in 1984 is a classic game. They finished tied 1-1 with Portugal, but they won 3-2 in extra time, France scoring the coup de grace goal just 1 minute before going into penalties. In that competition, Platini scored 9 of their 14 goals. They had 2 weak cups after that, two poor performances, reaching only the group stage in the second, and that brought them into the Zinedine Zidane years. They reached the semi-finals in 1996, and after winning the World Cup in 1998, they won their second Euro title in 2000. In a strange parallel to 1984, they beat Portugal in extra time of the semi-final again, just before it went to penalties. The goal in 1984 had been at 1:19, a minute before the end of extra time, and it was at 1:17 here. France also won in extra time against Italy in the final of the same tournament, and that was when the golden goal rule was in use. They had equalized in injury time in that final, Italy diving all over the place to waste time after their goal at 55. They earned only a draw in their first against Romania in 2008, and that year they finished bottom of the group. But their fourth strong period began with a second quarterfinal finish in 2012, where they were knocked out by that very strong dynastic Spanish team. 2008 added to that with a second place finish, Portugal finally getting their revenge by winning in the final. And true to the established pattern between the two teams, it was done in extra time. Taking a look at their qualifying history in the Euro Cup, they hosted the first tournament, but they still had to qualify for it. They faced England in a preliminary round in 1964. They beat Bulgaria, who had narrowly knocked them out of the 1962 World Cup, but they fell in the final round to Hungary, and began a period of non-qualification that lasted until 1984, so 20 years without a Euro Cup appearance. In 1968, they won a group stage but fell to Yugoslavia in a playoff round. They tied the first game there but then lost 5-1 in the second leg away. 1972 saw them finishing third behind Hungary and Bulgaria, and in the following cup, it was third behind Belgium and East Germany. The second place team in both of those cups also didn't qualify, so they were really far from reaching the 72 and 76 cups. They came close in 1980, though, and finally reached the cup as host in 1984. 1988, though, was a dreadful campaign with just one win over Iceland and four ties over eight of their games to finish a distant third behind USSR and East Germany. However, they won all games in 1992 for a convincing qualification, which ironically took place between two non-qualifications for the World Cup. They passed every qualification after that, or from 1992 onwards. They went undefeated in 1996, but they did tie five of their 10 games. Apart from 2004, where they won all games in an easy group, they dropped points in four of their games, usually 10 games, in all of the other tournaments from 2000 to 2012. They usually started with one of these, tying Iceland in 2000, losing to Belarus in 2012, and often to weak teams like those above. Scotland beat them home and away in 2008, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, who they tied at home in 2012. In 2016, they didn't have to go through qualification because they were hosts, but they did a peculiar ghost qualification where they joined a group, but the games didn't count.
Yeah, an interesting way of doing things to help prepare them for the tournament. In the Euro 2016, they beat Romania, Albania, and tied Switzerland to top their group, so not really the strongest group. 16, they fell behind to an early penalty against the Republic of Ireland, but rallied in the second half to win 2-1. A 5-2 win against Iceland followed before they overcame Germany 2-0 in the semifinals, and they meet again here. France, as you mentioned, lost the final to Portugal in extra time, 1-0, which really was a bit of an upset and kind of left the host nation stunned. This despite outshooting Portugal 18-9 in the game.
Yeah, and despite Cristiano Ronaldo getting injured 25 minutes in, was it?
Yeah, substituted.
Yeah. Well, overall then, France isn't as consistent as other top teams, at least in their qualifications and in their record of reaching cups. However, they tend to be more successful if they reach the tournament, with six top four finishes in their 11 World Cup appearances since 1958 and four top four finishes in their last nine Euro Cup appearances. Let's get into their recent history, and maybe you can take us through that, Connor.
Sure. So, in very recent action, France came second in the 2018-19 UEFA Nations League A, behind Netherlands but ahead of Germany. And they came first in the 2020-21 League A edition ahead of Portugal, Croatia, and Sweden. They currently await the final four tournament to decide the overall champion, and that will be in October. Looking at the World Cup 2022 play,
Sorry, I think I was supposed to do the qualification for this tournament.
Sorry, I jumped before, right past you there.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, well, this was actually a pretty good qualification. They did finish in first place. But again, a little lapse there against Turkey, who bested them, winning. But they won all other games and didn't drop points to any weak team this time. So that was a bit more consistent. Okay, now take it away with 2022.
Yeah, that leads in nicely, actually. So, World Cup 2022 play, they demonstrated their inconsistency with a home draw against Ukraine in their first game. As you mentioned, Kevin, sometimes having trouble right out of the gates in qualifying, as was the case here. However, they improved that record with away wins in Kazakhstan, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. So after three games, they have 7 points and currently sit in first place.
Yeah, okay. Well, it would be a surprise if they didn't make it to that cup. Let's take a look at some of their scorers. And I'll just start out by saying, you know, Olivier Giroud has not really been a starter for his club teams for quite a while. And yet he has remained the main man for France.
Yeah, scoring 6 goals in qualifying. He was their leading goal scorer to get here. And, of course, being a very crucial member of the team that won the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like, it seems like they should be looking for another forward. I know they have Antoine Griezmann, but are you a bit worried that they're not replacing him?
I'm more surprised that he doesn't get more time for his club team. I think he's a good player. I think, France seem to have a system that works around him. They'll certainly have to think of replacing him soon, but France really has so much young talent coming in. I don't think it'll be a major concern in the long term.
Yeah, one of the players I like the most is N'Golo Kanté. I've heard, Connor, that the ocean covers, 72% of the Earth's surface?
About that.
Yeah. They say N'Golo Kanté covers the rest.
I would believe it. He seems to be back at his best. He covers so much of the pitch. He gives France such a great base for them to build up their attack. And in the recent Champions League final, Chelsea versus Man City, he was the man of the match. So if he carries that form into France, he does the work of two or three players out there. He's such an asset to have on the pitch.
Yeah, he is an amazing player. And again, a part of Leicester's season-winning title of the EPL. He was a main man there. Let's take a look at the 2022 scorers. They're not many, but do you want to take it away?
Yeah, Antoine Griezmann and Ousmane Dembele have the goals so far, just 3 of them. So not really a surprise. Not on that list there is 22-year-old striker Kylian Mbappe. He scored 27 goals in 31 league appearances for PSG this year. And was the leading goal scorer in France's domestic league. I would probably consider him to be their main danger man going forward.
He is, but he's not an out-and-out forward, is he?
No, he usually plays on the wing. With PSG, Neymar occupies that center forward role. But he's so young and is coming off such a career year. It's hard to see him not having an impact at this tournament.
Uh-huh. All right, well, we better get on with things and go to Portugal. Do you want to introduce them? Do they have a nickname they go by?
They do have a nickname. I don't think I can pronounce it, but it refers to the 5 shields or the dots inside them, which are on the Portuguese flag and crest. It's the emblem in the middle of their flag there. And that was used up until the 1970s as the badge on their shirt, so that's no doubt where the name came from.
Cool, very interesting. I think I have heard them called the Seleção, but I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that properly. Nevertheless, let's get into their long history and their tournament participation. So at times they feel like a top team in Europe due to their early entry into the World Cup in 1934. And in the Euro Cup, the first Euro Cup in 1960. And they've had some big successes when they've qualified. However, the fact of reaching only 2 of the first 16 World Cups and 1 of the first 9 Euro Cups argues their position as a small team in Europe, historically speaking. Additionally, they've also never won an Olympic medal in soccer. We haven't really talked about the Olympics much in our histories. However, consistent qualifications and really good results in recent years, remaining much longer than expected, suggests they are becoming a top team, perhaps. And they cemented this, or made a strong argument in that favor, in that direction, by winning Euro 2016.
Yeah, I would agree. They have been strong for quite some time, and that's reflected in their world rankings. As I said, they've been in the top 10 very, very consistently over the past decade, where it seems like France and more recently Germany have dropped out of that top 10. Portugal have stayed there.
Yeah, I'm sure any young soccer fans would basically regard them, as among the top teams. But it's kind of interesting that they haven't historically been that way. We'll take a look at the World Cup history in short. Well, and it is pretty short. They qualified for the World Cup only in 1966 and in 1986, in the last century. But since 2002, they've qualified every time. They did leave their mark in 1966 with Eusebio, who scored a thunderous 9 goals, helping them to third place, as well as, he didn't help them finish fourth in 2006. I mean, they finished third in 1966 and fourth in 2006. Oof, got a bit lost in myself there. There was much talk at the turn of the century about their golden generation, and that led to consistent qualification from 2002. But it continued on well beyond the actual players who were in that generation under the leadership of superstar Cristiano Ronaldo. With this talent, they reached the round of 16 in 2010 and 2018, and they finished fourth in 2006.
Yeah, some really good performances in recent World Cups. 2014, in one of their former colonies, Brazil, was a bit of an exception when they failed to advance from the group stage, finishing behind Germany and the United States. In 2018, they finished second in their group behind Spain, whom they tied 3-3 courtesy of a Cristiano Ronaldo hat-trick. And they finished ahead of Morocco and Iran. They were actually on course to win the group until conceding a 93rd-minute penalty to Iran to tie that game 1-1, which led to them finishing second in the group. And it also meant they met Uruguay in the round of 16 and lost that game for the tournament to come to an end.
Yeah, never a pleasant thing to meet Uruguay in the World Cup. Let's take a look at the Euro Cup history in detail. Euro Cup actually does mirror their fortunes in the World Cup play. It took them a long time to reach their first cup, which they did in 1984, and they became consistent participants since 1996, actually a bit earlier than World Cup participation, where they reached it in 2002 and participated consistently from that time. So a bit of a longer history in the 1996 onwards. They have the impressive record of passing the group stage every time they qualified, and they did even be better than that in 5 of the 8 qualifications. Though there's no qualification in the 1960s to mirror their 1966 World Cup success, their 1984 success in the Euro Cup, where they reached the semifinals, was followed by their second World Cup in 1986. In 1984, they went undefeated in the group stage, tying West Germany in their opener, but then they lost to host France in extra time of the next round, which was the semi-final in that 18 tournament. They didn't qualify for the next two cups after that, but a great run began in 1996. They were undefeated again in the group stage and again fell in the next round, the quarterfinals this time, at the tournament had expanded to 16 teams, with the Czech Republic delivering the death blow there. They did better in 2000, winning all group stage games, impressively beating England and Germany, and they passed Turkey in the quarterfinals before losing once again to France in extra time, just as they had in 1984. In 2004, they hosted the Euro Cup. Usually the opening game features the host and the pot four team in the group, which is designed to get the host off to a good start. However, Portugal was embarrassed by Greece. They lost to Greece in their opener. They recovered, though, and they won every game after that, all the way to the final, where they met the unlikely Greece again, who beat them again to snatch the title. It was in this tournament that Cristiano Ronaldo emerged. 2002 would be the only time since 2000 where they didn't reach the semifinals. They passed the group stage here, but they lost to Germany in the quarterfinal. That's in 2008. They lost to the same team in the first game of 2012, but they recovered from their loss to Germany to pass the group stage, and they reached the semi-final where they were knocked out on penalties by Spain. 2016 saw them win in the most unconvincing manner. Are you going to tell us about that one, Connor?
Yeah, I'll get into that a little bit later on.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'll skip talking about the 2016 Euro Cup and let you handle that one. And I'll go on to talk about their qualification. Is that moot?
Nope, that's good. Carry on.
Okay. In the Euro Cup qualification, they failed to reach the cup until their seventh attempt in 1984. They beat East Germany twice in their first campaign in 1960 and beat Yugoslavia in the first game of round two, but then they were knocked out with a 5-1 loss in the second leg. They were competitive, but not really close in the following campaigns, coming second behind Bulgaria and then Belgium, and then took third place in the next two, so not really close there. And 1984 was their first successful campaign, and they finished first over USSR, an away loss to them being their only points drop. Beating Poland, who were coming to the end of their strong period, was promising. However, they failed in the next two campaigns, with 1990 being a poor campaign and 1992 a little bit better. Sorry, I should say 1988 and 1992. In 1992, they won all at home, but they were poor on the road, and they finished behind Netherlands. From 1996, they qualified consistently, finishing fully 6 points ahead of Ireland and Austria that year. Despite a tie with Azerbaijan and being bested by group winners Romania, they still qualified directly in 2000. And after qualifying as host in 2004, they qualified directly again in 2008, despite being bested by first place Poland and tying 5 of their 14 games. It was second place again in 2012, finishing behind Denmark and narrowly ahead of Norway. But this time they required a playoff win over Bosnia and Herzegovina, just as they had in World Cup 2010 qualification, which 2 years prior. In 2016, qualification started with a loss at home to Albania, and they fired their manager after the first game. But that ended up being to good effect, as they went on to win all further games, and they finished a commanding first in the group. 2020 returned to their consistent pattern of dropping some points, but we'll take a closer look at that a bit later. Let's go and talk to you about their recent performances.
Yeah, a strong campaign in 2012 where they reached the semifinals gave Portugal something to build on. In that tournament, they advanced out of the group of death, which they seem to be in here, behind Germany, but ahead of Denmark and the Netherlands. In that tournament, they also gave eventual champion Spain arguably their toughest game, taking Spain all the way to penalties before Spain would go on to win. In Euro 2016, they had a very seemingly easy group, but they tied Iceland, Austria, and Hungary, tying all three games, and just barely managed to advance as a third-place finisher. They tied Hungary 3-3 in a game in which Hungary took the lead three different occasions, but could not hang on.
Wow, and I think Hungary won that group, didn't they?
They did. They finished first.
Yeah.
In the knockout stages, Portugal beat Croatia after extra time. They actually scored just 3 minutes before the end of that game to tie it up. They then beat Poland on penalties and then defeated Cinderella Team Wales in the semifinals. What was really, yeah, that hurt. That was really their only convincing game of the Cup. They seemed doomed in the final against France when Cristiano Ronaldo was subbed out injured at 25 minutes. But they managed to push through the game and take it to extra time, where an unlikely goal scorer, Eder, struck in the 109th minute for the only goal of the game and to seal Portugal's first title.
Yeah, and I don't think he's played for Portugal much at all since then. Do you know?
I don't think he's played much. He's kind of fallen off the map a little, but I'm not actually sure where he's playing these days.
I say thank God that Ronaldo got injured, because they sure needed his coaching from the sidelines.
That final was also memorable for the Moths in that game.
Oh, yes. That's right. I think one landed on his nose, didn't it?
Yes. Sobbing Cristiano Ronaldo had a moth on his nose, and what was an enduring, one of the most enduring images from that tournament.
All right. Well, let's just summarize Portugal here. So they had three good periods. 1966 was a bit of a spike. And it only took place in World Cup play, really. The second good period was around 1985, where they reached both the World and Euro Cups. And their third period, many thought it would just be around the turn of the century, but it's basically extended until now. And it may be wrong to call it a period. Maybe they've become a stronger team in general. The turn of the century team was captained by Luis Figo, but now Cristiano Ronaldo basically holds the reins, of course. But with Ronaldo reaching retirement in the coming years, there's a question as to whether they will really maintain that top form.
Yeah, Ronaldo 36 this year, so likely playing in his last Euros.
Very possible, yeah. Let's go to recent performances. Why don't you take it away there?
I'll start with the Nations League. They came first in the 2018-19 Nations League A ahead of Italy and Poland, and then went on to beat Switzerland and then Netherlands in the finals to win the very first Nations League title. Pretty good achievement for them. They finished second in League A in the most recent version, behind France, but ahead of Croatia and Sweden. So still a pretty good performance.
Yeah, just one loss to France. Looks like a pretty good record there.
Yeah, recent form, very strong. Couple ties, yeah, a lot of wins as well. So they come in good form, certainly better form than Germany, who were seeded.
Yeah, well, speaking of form, they didn't really start the 2020 qualifying campaign very well. They tied Ukraine and Serbia both at home in their first two games, but they pulled themselves together and won all the rest of the games, except in Ukraine, where they lost. So actually, Ukraine finished first in the group, but Portugal qualified directly, finishing second. And I guess that explains their pot three placement here.
Yeah, some of those losses and the draws too, even though they qualified in second, they didn't have a particularly strong record, 5 wins, 2 draws, and a loss. So yes, that hurt them in the seeding for this tournament, absolutely.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at how they're doing in the 2022 World Cup qualification.
Yeah, an early win at home against Azerbaijan was followed by a tie in Serbia, a team they tied in qualifying for this tournament, as you mentioned. Most recently, it was a 3-1 win over Luxembourg. So they stand first in that group, tied with Serbia, who has the same number of points. Even though their wins were against weaker opposition, it's always good to build wins heading into a tournament.
Yeah. Well, with Ireland looking pretty weak this time around, that seems like a fairly easy group.
Yeah, I agree. It's one they're in control of now, and they should be able to stay there.
All right, let's take a look at their scorers. Of course, on top is Cristiano Ronaldo. But, you know, he's not alone there. I feel the team has improved around him over the years. Obviously, Bruno Fernandes is a well-known name now. What do you say?
Yeah, and some players not on that list. João Felix, who plays for Atletico Madrid, and Diego Jota of Liverpool are also kind of up-and-comers. But Ronaldo, I mean, even at 36, he's still able to get it done. He scored 11 goals in qualifying, so half their total. So just a great record.
Yeah, incredible. He really is a force of nature. Let's take a look at the 2022 scorers. And there we see Diogo Jota. He's their top scorer.
Yeah, I think that coincided with his really good form for Liverpool. He had a few injuries towards the end of the season, but is in the lineup for this tournament.
Great. Okay, well, we better get on with it. And we're going to go to Hungary. Do we have a nickname for them?
Hungary are known as the Magical Magyars. Magyar is the name of their language and the identity of the population. So, yeah, it doesn't have no bears no similarity to Hungary, but Hungarian also bears no similarity to some of the languages around it in Europe.
Yeah. I've heard it's Asian in origin and quite a mysterious grammar and syntax. But don't quote me on that. Okay, let's get into the long history. I think I have heard them called the Magyars quite often, though. Let's get into the long history with their tournament participation. So they joined their first World Cup in 1934, not entering in 1930, and also missed in 1950 because of the war. A lot of countries hadn't recovered fully from the war. So they were one of them. But they participated in every competition since. They were undisputedly the best in the world in the 1950s. In both 1938 and 1954, they were in the final, and they deserved to win at least one of those to justify that reputation they had. They were widely recognized as the best team in the early 50s. Only England doubted that. So England invited them to Wembley in 1953 to prove that the English were better at soccer. And Hungary handed them their first ever home loss, winning 6-2 over the English. Furious, the English wanted a rematch. So they went to Hungary and lost 7-1.
Can you imagine anything more English than that?
They should have known better. Sadly, the 1956 revolution in their country slowly weakened them. They did less well in cups from 1958. They stopped reaching cups by 1986 and sadly fell to the bottom half of qualifying tables by the 1990s. But there is a glimmer of hope in this story because they've shown improvement in recent years. But knowing that history, we can understand why the fans were so upset in 2018 when Hungary lost to Andorra. This really must have touched a nerve in their country, seeming to fall from the highest heights to the lowest lows. But in fact, the lowest of their lows was probably 10 years earlier than that. Let's take a look at their history in the World Cup. We have to keep this one at the summary level. Hungary was powerful enough in 1934 that Bulgaria just dropped out of qualification after heavy losses to them. I think 4-1 losses in both home and away matches. They only reached the quarterfinal that year, but sorry, they being Hungary made the quarterfinal in. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page here. The quarterfinal in 1934. But they made it to the final in 1938, where they lost to Italy. They reached the final in 1954 again and were fully expected to win over West Germany because they crushed them 8-3 in the group stage. But they were taken by surprise by the Germans and they lost their first game in 6 years, an event which rattled the country so much that some people argue it led to the revolution against the Soviet Union in 1956. Regardless, that began a slow decline. They did reach the quarterfinals in 1962 and 66, but then they never passed the group stage after that. They were a bit unlucky not to reach the Cup in 1970 and 74, but they did in the following three Cups. So roughly speaking, the group stage can define their level of strength in the 70s and 80s. But 1986 was the last time they reached the Cup, and the decline continued with third and then fourth place finishes in qualifying up to 2010. Reaching a UEFA playoff in 1998 might seem like an exception, and I suppose it is, but they lost there to Yugoslavia 7-1 at home and 5-0 in the away leg, which probably made them wish they had finished third or fourth that year. From 2006, though, they were getting more competitive in the campaigns, but they still seem quite a ways from reaching the World Cup.
Yeah, most recently, 2014 wasn't actually a bad campaign. They finished third behind Netherlands and Romania, but ahead of Turkey that year. They did suffer an embarrassing 8-1 loss to the Netherlands, though. It was, though, a very poor showing in 2018 qualification where they lost fully half their games. They failed to take even a point home or away against the top two, Portugal and Switzerland. A draw in Faroe Islands was looking like the low point before that 1-0 loss to Andorra, which you mentioned. That was Andorra's first win in a qualifying campaign since 2004. So really shows kind of what an achievement or lack thereof it was for Hungary dropping that game.
Oh, yeah, there was hell to pay with the fans there. I think they refunded the fans' money and gave them shirts and really had to try to make it up to them. Okay, well, we're going to go into a bit more detail for the Euro Cup, so let's begin that. Hungary's best years had actually passed when Euro Cup competition started in 1960, but that decline was slow, and something of their former greatness showed in top four finishes in 1964 and 1972. In 1964, they qualified over France, and with no group stage, they lost in extra time to Spain in the semi-finals, but they beat Denmark in extra time to take third place. In 1972, they won their qualifying group over Bulgaria and France, and then, after tying Romania twice in a final playoff, they went to a replay, which they won to qualify. They lost both games of the four-team final tournament to USSR, and then they lost to Belgium to finish in fourth place. From 1976, they failed to qualify for any cups, though they finished second in the qualifying group in the next two campaigns, a particularly tight one in 1982. Fortunes declined further as they moved to third and then fourth place finishes, bottoming out in 2008 to a sixth place finish, which we'll discuss in the next section. But their form improved after that, and they reached the expanded tournament of Euro Cup 2016, not only reaching it, but passing the group stage undefeated, which included a draw with eventual winner Portugal. We've covered a lot of that ground. They finished atop the group, actually, but they wished they hadn't when Belgium turned out to be their opponent in the round of 16. They lost their 4-0 But walked away probably feeling better about soccer than they had in the last 50 years. A close look at qualifying paints a picture of that slow decline. 4 years after the Soviets had crushed the rebellion of 1956, with tanks in the streets of Budapest, they were knocked out of the first Euro Cup in 1960 by the USSR. It must have been psychologically painful, but they would be faced with that several times over the next few years. They successfully passed three rounds of qualification in 1964, but the format went to a group stage in 1968, which they won over East Germany, Netherlands, and Denmark. Unfortunately, that led them to a playoff against USSR. They won the home leg there, but that probably only made it more painful when they lost the away leg by a larger margin. In 1972, they won the group and the subsequent playoff over Romania, but that would be their last successful qualification for the Euro Cup. They finished second in the following two campaigns and sunk to fourth after that, finishing behind Greece in 1984. Fourth place would become their permanent finishing spot until 2008, except for third place in a tight campaign. Third place in a tight campaign in 1988. In 1992, they lost at home to group winners USSR, and tying them away didn't prevent them from finishing fourth again. In 1996, they were undefeated at home, but losing all games on the road meant finishing fourth again. A tie with Liechtenstein added to the insult of fourth place in 2000, and surprise upstarts Latvia condemned them in 2004 to yet another fourth place finish. But the bottom really came in 2008 when they finished sixth in a group of seven, which could hardly get any worse. And fortunately, it didn't. In 2012, they finished third, including a win over Sweden. And in 2016, they finished third again, this one coming with the bonus of it being an advancing position for the 2016 Euro Cup, which was now expanded, allowing them entry. They beat Norway in a playoff to reach the cup, and they performed well once there. 2020 was another fourth place finish, but the back door of the Nations Cup was available for entry into the competition. And I hope I'm not stealing your lines here. They did well taking advantage of that Nations Cup opportunity. Maybe you can fill that out for us.
They didn't qualify directly, but they did make it to a four-team playoff. There they won their first game 3-1 in Bulgaria to advance to the final. And in the final, they met the darlings of the 2016 Euros, Iceland, and beat Iceland 2-1 to make it back-to-back successful qualifications.
Super great. Okay, do you want to say anything more about the the recent Euro Cups, or should we move on?
Let's move on. I think we've covered it under Portugal and some of the other teams.
Okay, great. So, in summary, Hungary's long fall from the very top in the early 50s hit bottom with a sixth place finish in their Euro 2008 qualifying group. However, as we've said, they are moving upwards in the direction of a resurgence. However, it is the expansion of the Euro Cup that has given them their first entry into the tournament since 1986. And even in this 2012 campaign, they're really only there because of the expansion. And the worry is that their qualification campaigns haven't really improved enough to say that they've come back to cup form.
I think you summed it up perfectly there. They really would not have qualified in Euro 2016 or this tournament had it not expanded from 16 to 24 teams.
Yeah, and that actually leads us into the recent history, and maybe I'll just cover the Euro Cup qualifying first there, Connor, since we're talking about that. You can see it's not a great campaign. They finished in fourth place, although it is just 2 points out of second place. Wales finished second, and Slovakia finished third. Sorry, I'm all wrong there. Croatia was on top. Wales finished second, Slovakia third, Hungary fourth. And they did manage to beat Croatia at home. And they also beat second place Wales at home. But their road record was a little bit poor. And you took us through that Nations League playoff, which actually has nothing to do with the qualifying campaign. It's rather a backdoor. Yeah, go ahead, Connor.
Yeah, well, qualifying hasn't improved. They have done well in Nations League. In the inaugural edition, they finished second in League C behind Finland, but the top two were promoted, so they advanced to League B. There they finished first over Russia, Serbia, and Turkey. So they won promotion again, now into League A among where they'll play Europe's elite. Looking
Wow.
at World Cup 2022 play, they tied Poland 3-3 at home, and then beat San Marino and Andorra away. They stand second in the group behind England, but their two victories coming among two of the weakest teams in UEFA qualifying.
Nevertheless, I'm sure Andorra was a bit of a psychological barrier.
Yeah, you still need to win those. It's not automatic as they learn to their peril.
Yeah, and Andorra's getting better. I don't think they can be taken for granted as much as they used to be. Going back to the recent matches, do you know if any other team jumped up two groups like that? That's pretty impressive.
I believe they're the only ones that have won promotion in their two Nations League tournaments.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot there, but I don't think I remember seeing that. Let's take a look at their scorers in 2020, and I'll let you lead that.
Yeah, Willy Orban was their top scorer in qualifying for this tournament with 3 goals. He's actually a center back who plays for RB Leipzig, so it might show pointer or expose some of their weakness at the top end of the field. Adams Salai, he's only scored one in qualifying. He's probably the man they'll look to. He scored 23 goals in 70 appearances for Hungary, which is actually a better goals per game ratio than his club form. He's a 6'4" center forward who plays for Mainz in Germany.
Yeah, I think I remember him from the last cup. Two red cards there in the qualifying. That doesn't read that well.
No, that's something they'll have to watch. They're in a difficult group as it is, trying to play against one of the other teams in their group with 10 men, would surely
Oh.
condemn them to defeat.
Absolutely. I'm sure Ronaldo will be provoking them. No red cards in 2022, but a whole lot of goals there. Some of the same names.
Yeah, they do have goal scoring spread out. I think we have to keep in mind, though, that their goals came from the majority of their goals came from games against San Marino and Andorra. So, vastly different level of competition than they'll face here.
Very true. Yeah, well said. Yeah, if they have trouble scoring, that might be their downfall in the Euro Cup. And I guess that kind of leads us into part three of the podcast here. It's another long one, but let's just have a quick chat about the group. What do you say?
Well, I'll start with Hungary, and as magical as their run was in 2016, topping the group, I don't see a repeat of that here. Their records in Nations League play has been good, but they haven't been tested against top teams, and their qualification record, again, wasn't good enough to get them here automatically. They relied on the back door. I think they'll be in very tough. I think if they got a point, that would have to be celebrated by their fans.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. There is a bit of fragility in Germany and Portugal that they might possibly take advantage of, but I think even 1 point would be more than they can expect, to be honest.
So that takes us to the top three: Germany, France, and Portugal. Germany are the seeded team, but are actually ranked lower in FIFA and ELO than both France and Portugal, who were last year's finalists. Do you see Germany as being possibly the odd team out here, or how do you see this going?
I mean, there are some factors that kind of lead in that direction. They're coming in on the back of a few shocks, really. So that might affect their confidence. Picking up players who have been off the team for a couple of years now, that doesn't look like a good sign to me. And there's something I don't like about the announcer, sorry, the manager, kind of announcing that he's going to be done after the cup. That seems a bit demotivating to me. How about you for Germany?
Yeah, like we said, there's question marks over Germany, which very rarely is the case. I think this is the wrong time in their history to be placed in a really competitive group. Most of the times, I don't think they'd really bat an eye at it. But possibly doing a little bit of a rebuild, there is a chance that their weakness could be exposed by two really good teams. It's hard to imagine Germany not passing, but it doesn't really seem that their chances are much better than France or Portugal. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean we're really looking at details here because these are, three teams that you would be surprised didn't pass. But in a way, one of them has got to go, or basically, if Hungary gets no points, there's a chance all three of them will pass. But we're kind of tasked with picking one out of the three to not pass, which is very difficult to do.
Yeah, France are in such a good period right now. They've been inconsistent in tournaments. They've won World Cups and gone out in the group stage the next time. But they have such a deep team, coming in on such a dominant World Cup performance. I really see France going through and probably are my favorites to win the group. It's really going to come down to the games between them though, and Portugal and Germany, it may be a case, not to take anything away from Portugal, but does Cristiano Ronaldo decide that game, or is a team like Germany able to reduce his influence and thereby give themselves a better chance of winning?
I mean, if anyone can shut Ronaldo down, it's teams like this. And I agree. Actually, it's really through the course of this of doing this recording here that I've come to feel France is the favorite. I kind of came in really being unable to separate them. It's just there are a couple of little points to pick on with Germany and Portugal, but there don't seem to be any negative points for France. What do you think? Do you see anything that could be a weakness there?
I don't really see a weakness. What's hampered France in the past has been disunity, and kind of coaches that haven't had the confidence of the team, but they seem to have that now. They seem to be united. They seem to be ticking over well under Didier Deschamps. So I don't really see a weakness, and you phrased it well. Maybe some questions over Germany or Portugal, not many, but France just seems so solid at the moment.
Yeah. For Portugal, again, not a lot to pick on, but you have mentioned concern over Ronaldo's age. 36 is pretty old for a player, and you wonder, especially if they go far in the tournament, will he be able to sustain playing the way he has?
Yeah, he's done it for so long, but obviously had an injury at the last tournament, and he was on a Juventus team that kind of underachieved in Italy, so it wasn't the best year of his career. Obviously, still very, very strong, But Portugal also have some good players coming through. There could be some draws. It could be teams, all these teams could take points off each other on any given day. So it's going to probably come down to their head-to-head games. Really hard to pick winners. But if I had to separate them, which you tend to make me do, I'm going to say France first, Germany second, Portugal third, and Hungary last. Do you agree?
Well, you kind of stole my line there, but I was going to add with Portugal just one more thing. Like they had they kind of staggered through that campaign in 2016. You said the only kind of convincing performance was against Wales. That was just one of their seven games. They tied all three group stage games there. I was unconvinced by them in 2016. So I'm not sure they've changed that much since then. The other thing I was thinking about was they're a team that often takes games to extra time and penalties. And I wonder with Ronaldo at 36, whether he could really handle, reaching or playing that many minutes. But if you're going to put me to the test here, I got to say France on top. And, Germany's consistency wins out for me over Portugal. But honestly, I wouldn't be surprised to see it finish anyway. And I kind of have a little hope that Hungary will play a role by maybe stealing a tie off one of these teams and them being the deciding factor.
Yeah, that would make it interesting. So we are in agreement, but like you, if the top three, they could finish in any order and it really wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, this is going to be just a fabulous group to watch. But I think that's it for me for this podcast. How about you, Connor?
Yeah, nothing else to add for me. Can't wait for the tournament to get started. We'll have to wait the longest for Group F to get started. But once it does, it should be fabulous. There'll be great games every match day.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be the best group to watch, I think. Okay, well, have a great evening, Connor, and thanks very much for joining here.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to work on this podcast with you. Thanks for everything, Kevin, and we'll see you at the tournament.
You bet. Okay, take care, Connor.